I've been asked to speak on how to win the argument, and I kind of thought we could all warm up by actually discovering what the argument is we're going to win, not by having the argument. Don't let's go there, but I kind of thought, here are a couple of starter questions. You know, what are the usual arguments at work for you? I just threw some ideas. They may be personal, just the sort of backbiting that goes on. They may be strategic, you know, what the firm is going to do and it should go here or there. They may be political, all the sort of maneuverings that go on. It may just be, this is true in loads of places, communications or rather lack of them. Why on earth didn't they? You'll know what they are. And how do they get dealt with in your workplace? I want to just take a couple of moments. Simply, you know, if yours is the perfect workplace that doesn't understand any of these things, that's fine. You smile sweetly and let the others tell you about the problems around their place. Have a couple of moments just to chat through what arguments go on in your workplace. Well, let me interrupt you there. Now, I mean, I don't know, I wasn't listening in. And you may have just been doing the sensible things and introducing yourselves and talking about weather and the Wimbledon, but you didn't seem to be sort of short of issues to discuss about. Everyone seemed to be yakking away quite happily. I was a bit worried that I see two from our own office talking very animatedly. I hope that was about Wimbledon. Look, how to win the argument. I mean, the starting place does seem to be that few offices are argument-free zones. That's fair enough, isn't it? I've even come across one man, one women businesses that seem to be able to fall out with themselves. How to win the argument's a great practical question. And if we could find the answer, it would be a great practical skill. So we're going to begin by opening our Bibles, listening to the passage we've been given, see if it's got any answers for us, and Joe's going to come and read for us.
That's Romans 12, 9-21. Love must be sincere. Hate what is evil, cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Honour one another above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervour, serving the Lord. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with God's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everybody. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my friends, but leave room for God's wrath, for it is written, "It is mine to avenge. I will repay," says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good.
Joe, thank you very much indeed. Well, you know, when you look at it, it is a conflict, really, isn't it? They give me a title, How to Win the Argument. And they give me a passage that says nothing about how to win the argument. Winning isn't really mentioned in the whole passage. That is, of course, the point. The most striking thing it seems to be saying, really, is you don't have to win. There are more important things than winning, which is anathema to any competitive type. It's why I need to hear this, because instinctively I am looking to win and to have the last word. It's why some are already thinking this is impractical in the real world. You know, if you want to get on in business, you can't quite imagine Lord Sugar saying you're hired to anyone who says you don't have to win. Kind of isn't in his makeup, is it? It feels, if we're not careful, as if it's going to reduce Christians to doormats or soft touches. But look deeper and you'll find it's not quite as soft as we might imagine. See, here are a couple of paragraphs written to Christians on how to handle fellow Christians. Clearly coming out of a massively different frame from the usual business model. Yes, says our hard-nosed business, and might have guessed it, it may be okay for the genteel church world, but it's dog-eat-dog in the workplace, and you can't afford to show your weakness there. I understand the sentiments, but I don't want to say the church isn't always quite as civilized and uncompetitive and as full of limp wimps as you may imagine. That's why these verses were written. That's why they had to be written. So let me pull out just a few threads for you. I mean, there's not time to sort of pull them out and examine. I'll just sort of tug at the end, and you can go back later on and look more closely and see what's there. Here's the first little idea that seems to me comes through this, and that's this. Love the good rather than the winning. It's almost as much about how you handle the dispute as what you dispute about, isn't it? But see, look at verse 9. Love must be sincere. I think of a Christian friend. He's in a business partnership, and recently the board meeting took a decision after, endless months of preamble, which goes against all the principles of the organization. He's pulling his business out on principle. And when you do that, it's always a difficult, painful thing. There's conflicts with the wider partnership. There's conflicts within. Should we do it? Do we do it now? Do we wait? And as I was chatting with him on the phone the other day, he just said to me, Hugh, I've got to keep loving those around me. If I lose that attitude, I'm wasting everything. Really quite striking. Now, don't worry, he's made of steel. He's going ahead with what he's doing, but he knows he needs actually to be showing love. Or look how verse 10 goes, hate what's evil, cling to what's good. See, if you're in an argument, be right. That helps if you want to win the argument, doesn't it? Be right. But what he's saying here as well is that do it right is vital too. It's not actually a line for the plucky loser. It's certainly not a line for the Christian who rolls over and gives in when the elbows come out, and the sharp practices start. They don't need to be told, cling to what's good. Because they'll quickly disappear from anywhere where it could get elbowed out. No, that line is for those who are in the thick of it. And part of it is not being self-absorbed in disputes. See verse 10? Honour one another above yourselves. Not resorting to the snide comments or the gossipy digs, the cutting comments about others, the exaggerated claims about myself. Or look on down to verse 16. Don't be proud, but be willing to be associated with people of low position. It's a warning to the proud, to those of us who get stuck up. But it's about more than just, will we acknowledge and notice the secretary, the cleaner, the whatever. The world of difference, isn't there, between those who are only involved in disputes around them and their world, and the ones who are also known to put their support, their weight, their influence on behalf of the bottom of the pile. Now, who fights their corner in your workplace? I love the good rather than the winning. Here's a second thread to pick up from it. To live at peace rather than at each other's throats. Well, that's really what's going on in verse 18, isn't it? Just look down to verse 18. Well, we'll take the verse before, really. Don't repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what's right in the eyes of everybody. If it's possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. It's actually one of my favourite verses, that verse, because it's so realistic. The Bible doesn't have its head stuck in the clouds and out of touch with reality. Its feet are really very firmly on the ground, aren't they? They know this is only an if. If it's possible. You can't always pull this off. Now, if it's possible, it's never entirely in your power to deliver, for a start, as far as it depends on you. See, it takes two to tango. Well, it takes two to be at peace. I may not be able to deliver on this. But as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. I mean, some disputes are fierce, aren't they? You know, policy arguments can be passionate, and rightly so. Some arguments are painful. Both going for the same job, you've got to argue your own case. There's only going to be one winner, and there's got to be at least one loser. As far as it depends on you. A recent assessment I was talking through with a friend, the management team had divided the workforce. And the assessment agreed they'd made the right decisions, they had to do it, those above them would have been down on them like a ton of bricks if they hadn't made those moves. But the verdict also said, work harder at bringing people with you. You know, they were so goal-focused, they'd forgotten that people were involved too. And the job I hate most, one management type was telling me not so long ago, he said, is making people redundant. And he'd have to do it painfully. He said, look, I try to give them as full an explanation as I can. I try to make it as fair and transparent to them and the rest of the workforce so that they can understand. But, you know, so often there's so much, there's not shock, there's hurt and there's anger and there's heat around. I never fully know what they've heard. I try and give a letter of explanation for them. But he said, I want them to be able to say afterwards, you know, whatever other feelings they take away, at least he told me himself. And he had to meet with five people face to face and break the news to them. If it's possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Live at peace rather than in each other's throats. I mean, we don't want to live that if we can. I don't need the credit to be proved right. Well, don't bother to claim it. It rarely helps life afterwards. I don't need to finger the individual who got it wrong to win the argument. If you don't need to, don't do it. Here's an extraordinary thing I came across. You'll have heard of William Wilberforce, the great politician, and his battle to abolish the slave trade that went on year after year in Parliament to do it. There was once a time, and it was pretty much only once, in the Commons, where Wilberforce demolished an opponent, and someone described it, they said he poured out a strain of sarcasm which none who heard it would ever forget. And one of his fellow MPs said this about it afterwards. It's the most striking thing I almost ever heard. But I look upon it as a more singular proof of Wilberforce's virtue than his genius. For who but he was ever possessed of such a formidable weapon and never used it? Until they heard it that day, that they hadn't realized he'd got it in him. Suddenly realized that this man could wipe the floor with it. But he wasn't going to use that weapon. If it's possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Love the good rather than the winning. Live at peace rather than at each other's throats. Here's my last little thread for you to explore. Win the war rather than the argument. Win the war rather than the argument. See, if our previous point was about how you can win the war and lose the peace, And at this point, it's just a reminder that some people never ever win the war because they're so busy winning the argument. And we've all seen it done, haven't we? You know, the fellow who emerges victorious from the argument, and we know that all his credit is gone in the office. Yeah, he won it sure enough, but there's blood on the floor, and the brutal way he won it guarantees he'll lose in the long run. Not a lot of consolation if it's your blood that's on the floor that time round, but it can still be true. And the Bible's always encouraging us to take the long-term view, the eternal long-term view. I mean, look down to verse 19, for example. See, don't take revenge, my friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it's written, it's mine to avenge, I will repay, says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you'll heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. And yet, instinctively, we want to hit back when people lash out at us. Very hard not to want revenge, especially if it's there for the taking. And to have it as soon as we can get it. No, he says, treat them with fairness. Treat them as you would any other needy person when you see them at that opportunity. I can remember being criticized at a public meeting over a disputed policy move by the firm, and for 15 minutes I got slandered and accused of all kinds of things, including going behind the management's back, when everything I'd done had actually been done with the full knowledge of, even at the suggestion of, the senior management team, who never said a word to defend me. I was seething. Fortunately, I had a good friend next to me who was more Christian than me and was calming me down as it went along, and enough people there knew it wasn't true. The motion got sidelined and changed, and my friend just grabbed me as I was sort of bristling ready to have a go back and said, look, you've won the war, Hugh. You don't have to have a go back. I will repay, says the Lord. Don't be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. See, what a disaster to descend to the same level just to win. What a hypocrisy for those who represent Jesus. The Jesus who faced evil in all its power and all its slanders at the cross, who could have called legions of angels to come and rescue him, wipe out the opposition, who took the mockery of soldiers and crowds in silence, who prayed as they nailed him to the cross, Father, forgive them, they know not what they're doing. Who, as his heart was literally ripped apart in agony, says to Mary, Mother, behold your son. And to John, John, behold your mother. Who says to the dying, deservingly guilty thief next to him, today, with me in paradise. To live as a representative of that Jesus in a workplace and allow the petty evils of office life and office squabbles to reduce me to tit-for-tat malice and revenge and evil? Now, don't be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. How useless all this wisdom is for those of us fixated on winning the argument at any cost. How priceless it is for pulling our eyes back to winning the war for my soul, your soul, the souls of our colleagues. How to win the argument? Well, yes. Sure, could be great to do, but don't forget the more important things. Thank you.